Plus, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Just 5 days left until Election Day. Donald Trump is in New Mexico, which hasn't gone with a Republican since George W. Bush.
They all said, don't come. I said, why? You can't win New Mexico. I said, look, your votes are rigged. We can win New Mexico.
Kamala Harris earlier responded to Trump's remarks that he would protect women whether they like it or not.
It actually is, I think, very offensive to women in terms of not understanding their agency, their authority, their right, and their ability to make decisions about their own lives, including their own bodies.
The U.S. said today 8,000 North Korean troops could be just days away from fighting in Ukraine. Deputy U.N. Ambassador Robert Wood.
PRC-based companies have even collaborated with Russian defense firms to design and produce long-range attack drones.
On Wall Street, the Dow finished the day 378 points lower. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. A 42-year-old man was sentenced to 8.5 years in prison for possessing a firearm as a felon. Jason L. Coleman was arrested last April after police responded to a domestic violence incident. A search warrant revealed 3 handguns in Coleman's Marshfield home. His DNA was present on all 3. When arrested, Coleman was on state probation for a felony battery offense. At the sentencing, the judge highlighted this firearm incident as the latest in a long line of violence. Coleman's criminal history included multiple assault and battery convictions, particularly against women. Jason L. Coleman was sentenced on Wednesday to 102 months in federal prison, followed by 3 years of supervised release. More cattle shortages are affecting beef prices at local meat markets. Brittany Merlot has more.
Geis Meat Market in Merrill has been dealing with a backlog of orders. Owner Andy Geis says customers would normally bring in 10 to 15 beef for harvest. Now they're only bringing in 7 or 8. So if you're looking to order a side of beef directly from them, you're going to have to wait until mid-January. And if you were hoping for the price of meat to start going down sometime soon, don't hold your breath. Geis says he suspects prices will keep rising with the wait because it takes a long time to replenish herds. A recent report from the Farm Bureau shows beef rates have hit a record high of over $8.15 per pound. It's impacting producers and consumers.
The Wisconsin Rapids Elks Lodge 693 is hosting a Nightmare Before Christmas party to benefit those in need at Christmas time. A giving tree will be set up at the lodge with tags for suggested gifts. There will be games and food, and costumes are encouraged. However, this is a family-friendly event. Bring the kids for another use of the costumes and fun. That's Saturday, November 2nd from 5 to 7. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Packers shorthanded.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers host the Detroit Lions Sunday, but had 7 players missing from practice, including 3 starting offensive linemen and quarterback Jordan Love, all with injuries suffered against the Jaguars. I asked Love if he thinks he can play this week despite a groin injury.
I've actually never had a groin injury to this severity, but I'm going to keep working, keep doing rehab and treatment, and get myself ready to go.
The Lions had 10 players on the injury list, unable to practice. NBA, the Bucks and the Grizzlies tonight in Memphis. The Bucks are 1-3. The Grizzlies 2-3. The Badgers men's basketball team with a 78-62 preseason win over UW River Falls. Greg Gard.
In terms of the game, obviously we got a long ways to go defensively. That's not new news. I thought we did some good things at times, but you know, as I went to the bench, I thought we got leaky in different areas, and it shows me who's more ready than others.
That's Wisconsin's Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
What makes Wisconsin great?
Find out as Todd Albaugh and friends tour the state by bus, and they're coming to a city near you.
If people want to come out and say hi, first drink is on us, whether it's alcohol or not, and then some cheese curds, and we're going to be doing that all week long.
La Crosse to Eau Claire, Stevens Point to Appleton. Learn more and where to join them at civicmedia.us/whatmakeswisconsingreat.
The Todd Albaugh Show, a tour of, by, and for the people, all week, noon to 2.
Stuck under cloudy skies with scattered showers, tapering down to light drizzle this afternoon. Then, winds begin to whip, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, crashing our temperatures. In fact, we'll be hanging out in the low 40s for most of the day, and feeling some spooky wind chills. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 46 degrees at our studios.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure. Down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Heartland Trophy is up for grabs in Iowa City. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Todd Alba joins us. Hey, Todd.
We're here in front of the Bonham Theater to talk entertainment. Todd forgot his battery pack. We are running off of Todd's truck engine.
I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but if your travel budget got cut, I'm just wondering if it coincided. All of a sudden, I got like a 10 grand a week per diem. I don't know if that is related.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll be live from Fox City Stadium, the home of the Timber Rattlers, with Trigby Olson of the Lincoln Project, your calls and more. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Good evening and welcome to WFHR's Halloween special. For the next 2 hours, enjoy poems, stories, and songs to get you into the Halloween spirit as you go trick-or-treating or just staying home to hand out candy. So dim the lights and steady your nerves as the staff of WFHR brings you stories and poems that will thrill you a little and chill you a little. And now, on with the show.
Jack-O-Lantern by Mary E. Folsom. Who is this nabob come to town after a long vacation? He seems to have a host of friends and makes a great sensation. He stalks about these frosty nights while troops of boys run after to welcome him with merry jests and ringing shouts of laughter. 'Tis Mr. Jack-O-Lantern. He towers above the noisy group as though he were a grandee and struts about upon his stilts as agile as a dandy. You might think him an eastern prince because his skin's so yellow, but spite of all his airs, he is a common sort of fellow, this Mr. Jack-O-Lantern. All summer long upon the ground he lay forlorn, dejected. No one in all the country round was quite so much neglected. But see him now, with head aloft, he shines with regal splendor, and loyal subjects by the score admiring homage render. How proud is Jack-O-Lantern! Now give 3 cheers for Jack, my lads, 3 rousing cheers and hearty, for is he not the brightest one in all your jolly party? And though his is an empty head, he can with satisfaction amuse a crowd and make himself the center of attraction. Hurrah for Jack-O-Lantern!
Holds my fate at his request.
of Halloween and all the kiddies having fun. No doubt they're in the mischief, trick or treat not yet begun. Tomorrow night my final curtain faced, and who's to blame? I've made a date with Lucifer, yes his list will bear my name. Little jack-o'-lantern, will you light my way? But through the depths of darkness I'll be traveling today. The walls are falling in on me, a stabbing pain deep in my chest. The deal's been sealed, the devil holds my fate at his request.
Open Window by Saki. My aunt will be down presently, Mr. Newtell, said a very self-possessed young lady of 15. In the meantime, you must try and put up with me. Brampton Newtell endeavored to say the correct something which should duly flatter the niece of the moment, without unduly discounting the aunt that was to come. Privately, he doubted more than ever whether these formal visits on a succession of total strangers would do much towards helping the nerve cure which he was supposed to be undergoing. "You know how it will be," his sister said when he was preparing to migrate to this rural retreat. "You will bury yourself down there and not speak to a living soul, and your nerves will be worse than ever from moping. I shall just give you letters of introduction to all the people I know there. Some of them, as far as I can remember, were quite nice." Brampton wondered whether Miss Sappleton, the lady to whom he was presenting one of the letters of introduction, came into the nice division. "Do you know many of the people round here?" asked the niece, when she judged that she had had sufficient silent communication. "Hardly a soul," said Brampton. "My sister was staying here at the rectory, you know, some 4 years ago, and she gave me letters of introduction to some of the people here." He made the last statement in a tone of distinct regret. "Then you know practically nothing about my aunt," pursued the self-possessed young lady. "Only her name and address," admitted the caller. He was wondering whether Mrs. Sappleton was in the married or widowed state. An undefinable something about the room seemed to suggest masculine habitation. "Her great tragedy happened just 3 years ago," said the child. "That would be since your sister's time." "Her tragedy?" asked Brampton. Somehow, in this restful country, spot tragedies seemed out of place. "It is quite warm for the time of year," said Brampton. "But has that window got anything to do with the tragedy?" "Out through that window, 3 years ago to a day, her husband and her two brothers went off for their day's shooting. They never came back. In crossing the moor to their favorite snipe shooting ground, they were all three engulfed in a treacherous piece of bog. It had been that dreadful wet summer, you know, and places that were safe in other years gave way suddenly without warning. Their bodies were never recovered. That was the dreadful part of it." Here, the child's voice lost its self-possessed note and became falteringly human. "Poor aunt, always thinking that they will come back someday. They and the little brown spaniel that they lost with them. And walk in that window just as they used to. That is why the window is kept open every evening till it is quite dusk. Poor dear aunt. She has often told me how they went out, her husband with his white waterproof coat over his arm, and Ronnie, her youngest brother, singing, 'Bertie, why do you bound?' as he always did to tease her, because she said it got on her nerves. Do you know, sometimes, on still, quiet evenings like this, I almost get a creepy feeling that they will all walk in through that window." She broke off with a little shudder. It was a relief to Frampton when the aunt bustled into the room with a whirl of apologies for being late and making her appearance. "I hope Vera has been amusing you," she said. "She's been very interesting," said Frampton. "I hope you don't mind the open window," said Mrs. Sappleton briskly. "My husband and brothers will be home directly from shooting, and they always come in this way. They've been out for snipe in the marshes today, so they'll make a fine mess over my poor carpets." "So like you menfolk, isn't it?" She rattled on cheerfully about the shooting and the scarcity of birds and the prospects for duck in the winter. To Frampton, it was all purely horrible. He made a desperate but only partially successful effort to turn the talk to a less ghastly topic. He was conscious that his hostess was giving him only a fragment of her attention, and her eyes were constantly straying past him to the open window and the lawn beyond. It was certainly an unfortunate coincidence that he should have paid his visit on this tragic anniversary. "The doctors agree in ordering me complete rest, an absence of medical excitement, and avoidance of anything in the nature of violent physical exercise," announced Frampton, who labored under the totally widespread delusion that total strangers and chance acquaintances are hungry for the least detail of one's ailments and infirmities, their cause and cure. "On the matter of diet, they are not so much in agreement," he continued. "No," said Mrs. Sappleton, in a voice which only replaced a yawn at the last moment. Then she suddenly brightened into alert attention, but not to what Frampton was saying. "Here they are at last," she cried. "Just in time for tea, and don't they look as if they were muddy up to the eyes?" Frampton shivered slightly and turned toward the niece with a look intended to convey sympathetic comprehension. The child was staring through the open window with dazed horror in her eyes. In a chill shock of nameless fear, Frampton swung round in his seat and looked in the same direction. In the deepening twilight, three figures were walking across the lawn toward the window. They all carried guns under their arms, and one of them was additionally burdened with a white coat hung over his shoulders. A tired brown spaniel kept close at their heels. Noiselessly, they entered the house, and then a hoarse young voice chanted out of the dusk, "I say, Bertie, why do you bound?" Frampton grabbed wildly at his stick and hat. The hall door, the gravel drive, and the front gate were dimly noted stages in his headlong retreat. A cyclist came along the road and had to run into the hedge to avoid imminent collision. "Here we are, my dear," said the bearer of the white Macintosh, coming in through the window. "Fairly muddy, but most of it is dry. Who was that who bolted out as we came up?" "A most extraordinary man, Mr. Newtell," said Mrs. Sappleton. "Could only talk about his illness and dashed off without a word of goodbye or apology when you arrived. One would think he had seen a ghost." "I expect it was the spaniel," said the niece calmly. "He told me he had a horror of dogs. He was once hunted into a cemetery somewhere on the banks of the Ganges by a pack of pariah dogs, and had to spend the night in a newly dug grave with the creatures snarling and grinning and foaming just above him, enough to make anyone lose their nerve."
"I just moved in my new house today. Haunted house. Still I made up in my mind to stay. Nothing wasn't gonna drive me away. When I see something that give me the creep, had one big eye and two big feet. I stood right still and I did the freeze. Up to me. Made a noise with his feet to sound like a drum. Said you gonna be here when morning come. Say yes, I'll be here when the morning come. Be right here, I ain't gonna run. I've stove was a blazing hot. Coffee was a boiling in the pot. My grease had melted in my hand. I had a hunk of meat in my hand. From outer space there sat a man. He drank the hot coffee right from the spout. He ate the raw meat right from my hand. Drank the hot grease from the frying pan. I said to me, you better run. And don't be here when the morning comes. Say yes, I'll be here when the morning comes.
The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes. The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon the cloudy seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor. And the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. He'd a French cocked hat on his forehead, a bunch of lace at his chin, a coat of claret velvet, and breeches of brown doeskin. They fitted with never a wrinkle, his boots were up to the thigh, and he rode with a jeweled twinkle, his pistol butts a twinkle, his rapier hilt a twinkle, under the jeweled sky. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the dark inn yard. He tapped with his whip on the shutters, but all was locked and barred. He whistled a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. And dark in the dark old inn yard, a stable wicket creaked, where Tim the ostler listened. His face was white and peaked. His eyes were hollows of madness, his hair like moldy hay. But he loved the landlord's daughter, the landlord's red-lipped daughter. Dumb as a dog, he listened, and he heard the robber say, "One kiss, my bonny sweetheart, I'm after a prize tonight, but I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply and harry me through the day, then look for me by the moonlight, watch for me by the moonlight. I'll come to thee by the moonlight, though hell shall bar the way." He rose upright in the stirrups. He scarce could reach her hand, but she loosened her hair in the casement. His face burned like a brand. As the black cascade of perfume came tumbling over his breast, he kissed its waves in the moonlight. Oh, sweet waves in the moonlight. Then he tugged at his rein in the moonlight and galloped away to the west. He did not come in the dawning. He did not come at noon. And out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, a redcoat troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the old inn door. They said no word to the landlord. They drank his ale instead. But they gagged his daughter and bound her to the foot of her narrow bed. Two of them knelt at her casement with muskets at their side. There was death at every window and hell at one dark window, for Bess could see through the casement the road that he would ride. They had tied her up to attention with many a sniggering jest. They had bound a musket beside her with the barrel beneath her breast. "Now keep good watch." And they kissed her. She heard the doomed men say, "Look for me by the moonlight. Watch for me by the moonlight. I'll come to thee by the moonlight, though hell shall bar the way." She twisted her hands behind her, but all the knots held good.
She writhed her hands till her fingers were wet with sweat or blood. They stretched and strained in the darkness, and the hours crawled by like years. Till now, on the stroke of midnight, cold on the stroke of midnight, the tip of one finger touched it. The trigger, at least, was hers. The tip of one finger touched it. She strove no more for the rest. Up, she stood up to attention, with the barrel beneath her breast. She would not risk their hearing. She would not strive again. For the road lay bare in the moonlight, blank and bare in the moonlight, and the blood of her veins in the moonlight throbbed to her love's refrain. Tuttle-lot, tuttle-lot, had they heard it? The horse's hooves ringing clear. Tuttle-lot, tuttle-lot, in the distance, were they deaf that they did not hear? Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The redcoats looked to their priming. She stood up straight and still. Tuttle-lot in the frosty silence, tuttle-lot in the echoing night. Nearer he came and nearer. Her face was like a light. Her eyes grew wide for a moment. She drew one last deep breath. And her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. He turned, he spurred to the west. He did not know who stood, bowed with her head o'er the musket, drenched in her own red blood. Not till the dawn he heard it, his face grew gray to hear, how Bess, the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with a white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the gold noon, wine red his velvet coat, when they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway. And he lay in his blood on the highway, with a bunch of lace at his throat. And still of a winter's night they say, when the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, a highwayman comes riding, riding, riding. A highwayman comes riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clatters and clangs in the dark inn yard. He taps with his whip at the shutters, but all is locked and barred. He whistles a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair.
This is an important announcement for Wisconsinites who plan to vote in the November 2024 election. Leading nonpartisan economists have analyzed the economic plans of Donald Trump and concluded that he would cause inflation to rise and the economy to slow. And 16 Nobel Prize-winning economists wrote a letter warning that Donald Trump would reignite inflation with his fiscally irresponsible budgets. Donald Trump's tariff plan would act as a national sales tax, costing the average family as much as $4,000 per year. But Vice President Kamala Harris's plan would help middle-class families deal with rising costs. In her first 100 days, Kamala Harris would pass a ban on price gouging at the grocery store. And as vice president, she worked to cap the cost of many prescription drugs, including insulin, saving many families thousands of dollars per year. On the economy, the choice is clear. Vote Kamala Harris for president. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Action. www.abwt-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabe.
Thank you for listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. heroicdeed.com.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Wisconsin is receiving a lot of attention from political candidates as we race to the finish line of the November 5th election. Here's Lisa Hale in Green Bay.
The Resch Center in Green Bay stood at about 80% capacity as supporters of former President Donald J. Trump rallied. Trump spent nearly an hour and a half hurling insults at his opponent, Kamala Harris. He blamed her for what he called the immigrant occupation of the United States.
The day I take the oath of office, the migrant invasion ends, and the restoration of our country begins. November 5th, 2024 will be Liberation Day in America.
Trump said he would institute the death penalty for any immigrant in our country who kills an American citizen.
Down in Madison, another candidate made their case to Wisconsinites. Here's Savannah Tomei Olson.
Last night, Kamala Harris was in Madison holding a rally at the Alliant Energy Center. She brought some star power with her. The event included performances from Gracie Abrams, Mumford & Sons, and members of The National. She took the opportunity to speak directly to Gen Z.
You, who have only known the climate crisis, are leading the charge to protect our planet and our future. You, who grew up with active shooter drills, are fighting to keep our schools safe. You who now know fewer rights than your mothers and grandmothers, are standing up for freedom.
The latest Marquette poll has Donald Trump and Kamala Harris in a dead heat here in the Badger State. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Most people who cause a nuclear meltdown while working at a nuclear power plant would likely lose their job, not Homer Simpson. In last Sunday night's episode, it was revealed that despite his gross incompetence, Homer was never fired because his father Abe was a PI. The episode revealed that Abe's partner was taken out by Mr. Burns, who assured Abe that his son Homer would always have a job if Abe didn't snitch. I guess I should have spoiler alerted that. If you haven't watched The Simpsons, you've got 36 seasons to catch up on. The show airs Sunday nights on Fox. Bruce Springsteen is on record as refuting the Forbes info that says he is worth over $1 billion. The boss says he is not a billionaire, and it's because he spent money on superfluous things throughout his life and does not penny pinch. He also says he is a good boss and pays his chums in the E Street Band handsomely. Springsteen says it was never about the money, but always about making great music. He's done well on both fronts. One of these days, maybe he'll have Taylor Swift money. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Stuck under cloudy skies with scattered showers, tapering down to light drizzle this afternoon. Then, winds begin to whip, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, crashing our temperatures. In fact, we'll be hanging out in the low 40s for most of the day and feeling some spooky wind chills. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 44 degrees.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. I grew up on tour with my parents. Kind of different, but we bonded over music just like other families do over sports, camping, or other interests. And we talked. Little everyday conversations from silly to serious that built a foundation over time. Honest conversations. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life. And I was so grateful that you and Mom had become these sober, stable people who were always there for me.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. Whether it's music or anything else, I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, heading into the final weekend of the campaign with our guests Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, Kia Vakil, Dan Schumacher, and the weekend forecast.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6.
Who's that?
fool there, up there on the stair. Beware, beware, I hear somebody coming. Up on his toes, oh look there he goes. My Mr. Ghost is going to town. He takes his cane, his gloves and his hat, and like a cat, he hurries down the alley. The moon is bright, and this is the night when Mr. Ghost is going to town. Great, and he can't be late. He's got a day to do a little stepping. He'll shake his bone to hot saxophone, 'cause Mr. Ghost is going to town.
Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over the many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door, "only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished it morrow, vainly I sought to borrow from my book's successive sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore. For the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entering entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entering entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more." Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there that was spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping something louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what threat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore, till the wind and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obscene made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mine of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, begulling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countess at war, "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven thou," I said, "art sure no craven? Ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore? Tell me what thy lord name is on the night's plantation shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear his discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevance bore. For we cannot help agreeing with no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculpted bust above this chamber door, with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only with one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Other friends have flown before, on the morrow we will leave me, as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, "Nevermore." Startled at the stillness, broken by a reply so aptly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what it utters, it's only stock in store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmercifully disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs once burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore. Oh, never, never more." But the raven, still begullingly my sad fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioning seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy onto fancy, thinking what this usmost bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, "Nevermore." This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing, to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violent lining with the lamplit gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, methought, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. "Wretch," I cried, "thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite and nepenthe, from thy memories of Lenore. Quoth, oh, quoth, this kind Nephthine, and forgot this lost Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Galad? Tell me, I implore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by the heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a satined maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore."
Be that word our sign in pairing, bird or friend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black loom as a token of that lie that thy have spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door, quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never fitting, still in sitting, still is sitting on that pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all seeing of a demon that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming through shadows on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
What's in there?
Man's a skeleton in this closet.
That's all right, Puddin', he'll get used to you.
Spooks were having their midnight fling. The merry making was in full swing. They shrieked themselves to a cheerful dance. When the skeleton in the closet did his dance. A goblin giggle with fiendish glee. A shout rang out from a big banshee. Amazed was every ghostly glance. When the skeleton in the closet started to dance, all the witches were in stitches while his steps made rhythmic thumps, and they nearly dropped the broomsticks when he tried to do the bums. You never heard such unearthly laughter or such hilarious groans when the skeleton in the closet rattled his bones.
Into the snow-locked forests of Upper Hungary steal wolves in winter, but there is a footfall worse than theirs to knock upon the heart of the lonely traveler. One December evening, Elspet, the young, newly-wedded wife of the woodman Stefan, came hurrying over the lower slopes of the White Mountains from the town where she had been all day marketing. She carried a basket with provisions on her arm. Her plump cheeks were like a couple of cold apples. Her breath spoke short, but more from nervousness than exhaustion. It was nearing dusk, and she was glad to see the little lonely church in the hollow below, the hub, as it were, of many radiating paths through the trees, one of which was the road to her own warm cottage yet a half mile away. She paused a moment at the foot of the slope, undecided before entering the little chill, silent building, and making her plea for protection to the great battered stone image of Our Lady of Succor, which stood within by the confessional box. But the stillness and the growing darkness decided her, and she went on. A spark of fire glowing through the presbytery window seemed to repel rather than attract her, and she was glad when the convolutions of the path hid it from her sight. Being new to the district, She had seen very little of Father Rule as yet, and somehow the penetrating knowledge and burning eyes of the pastor made her feel uncomfortable. The soft drift, the lane of tall, motionless pines, stretched on in a quiet like death. Somewhere the sun, like a dead fire, had fallen into obsolescent embers, faintly luminous. They were enough only to touch the shadows with a ghastlier pallor. It was so still that the light crunch in the snow of the girl's own footfalls trod on her heart like a desecration. Suddenly there was something near her that had not been before. It had come like a shadow, without more sound or warning. It was here, there, behind her. She turned in mortal panic and saw a wolf. With a strangled cry and trembling limbs, she strove to hurry on her way, and always she knew, though there was no whisper of pursuit, that the gliding shadow followed in her wake. Desperate in her terror, she stopped once more and faced it. A wolf! Was it a wolf? Oh, who could doubt it? Yet the wild expression in those famished eyes, so lost, so pitiful, so mingled of insatiable hunger and human need. Condemned for its unspeakable sins to take this form with sunset, and so howl and snuffle about the doors of men until the blessed day released it. A werewolf, not a wolf. The terrific realization of the truth smote the girl as with a knife out of darkness. For an instant she came near fainting. And then a low moan broke into her heart and flooded it with pity. So lost, so infinitely hopeless. And so pitiful, yes, in spite of it all, so pitiful. It had sinned beyond any sinning that her innocence knew or her experience could gauge. But she was a woman, very blessed, very happy, in her store of comforts and her surety of love. She knew that it was forbidden to succor these damned and nameless outcasts, to help or sympathize with them in any way. But there was a good store of meat in her basket, and who need ever know or tell? With shaking hands she found and threw a sop to the desolate brute, then, turning, sped upon her way. But at home her secret sin stood up before her, and interposing between her husband and herself, threw its shadow upon both their faces. What had she dared? What done? By her own act forfeited her birthright of innocence. By her own act placed herself in the power of the evil to which she had ministered. All that night she lay in shame and horror. And all the next day, until Stefan had come about his dinner and gone again, she moved in dumb agony. Then, driven unendurably by the memory of his troubled, bewildered face, as twilight threatened, she put on her cloak and went down to the little church in the hollow to confess her sin. "Mother, forgive and save me," she whispered as she passed the statue. After ringing the bell for the confessor, she had not knelt long at the confessional box in the dim chapel, cold and empty as a waiting vault, when the chancel rail clicked and the footsteps of Father Rule were heard rustling over the stones. He came, he took his seat behind the grating, and, with many sighs and falterings, Elspeth avowed her guilt, and as, with bowed head, she ended, a strange sound answered her. It was like a little laugh, and yet not so much like a laugh as a snarl. With a shock as of death, she raised her face. It was Father Rule who sat there, and yet it was not Father Rule. In that time of twilight, his face was already changing, narrowing, becoming wolfish, the eyes rounded and the jaw slavered. She gasped and shrunk back, and at that, barking and snapping at the grating, with a wicked look, he dropped, and she heard him coming. Sheer horror lent her wings. With a scream, she sprang to her feet and fled. Her cloak caught on something. There was a wrench and crash, and like a flood, oblivion overswept her. It was the old deaf and nearly senile sacristan who found them lying there, the woman unhurt but insensible, the priest crushed out of life by the fall of the ancient statue, long tottering to its collapse. She recovered for her part. For his, no one knows where he lies buried. But there were dark stories of a baying pack that night and of an empty, blood-stained pavement when they came to seek for the body.
We'll be right back. Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's...
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Maggie Dawn.
Next, I have D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges. He was there on January 6th. We discuss. And 1st Congressional District candidate Peter Barca. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
He is a comedian, a writer, and an actor, and teaches comedy. One of Wisconsin's own. Dobie Maxwell joins me here on Nightlight. Hey, Dobe.
Pete Schwabba, I am Chico. You're the man. Can you hear me? Is my Amish wood-burning computer plugged into the...
You got Amish. No, you got to update, buddy. I got gas powered and it's working like a charm. So it'll change your life.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News.